Thank you for making Locked On Yankees your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms. On today's show, the Yankees are showing interest in a Japanese free agent. Will they go for it? We don't know. Some Hall of Fame inductions happened, finally, for some people, and more snubs. We'll discuss that. And we're going to have a random game of the day. We're going to look back at a random Yankee game from a random year. It'll be fun, I promise. Next on Locked On Yankees.
You are Locked On Yankees, your daily New York Yankees podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. I'm Stacey Gotsoulias. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see my name right in front of your face. If you're listening, I'm Stace Gotts on Twitter, S-T-A-C-E-G-O-T-S, because my full name is way too long for a username. You can find Locked On Yankees on Apple, Google, Odyssey, Spotify, Stitcher. You can listen to us via smart device by saying play podcast Locked On Yankees. As I mentioned, YouTube, subscribe, like, comment, do all those good things. Yeah, we have some things to talk about today. Hall of Fame news, which we'll get into second segment. First segment, we're talking about the Yankees. It seems the Yankees, the Blue Jays, and the Red Sox have some interest in a Japanese baseball player named Seiya Suzuki, which, I don't know. I'm thinking with that name, he should become a Yankee because Michael Kay will love saying it every 5 seconds. That would be fun for him. Don't you think? Seiya Suzuki. Hello? Anyone getting it? Yes. I'm sure you're all getting it. Okay. So this is from Pinstripe Alley about Seiya Suzuki, because I don't know much about him. I saw his name floating around over the last few days, and, you know, he's an outfielder. The Yankees have plenty of outfielders, although going from the past year, year and a half, there's one that's questionable because he always seems to be hurt. Sorry, Aaron Hicks. It's true. I mean, right now the Yankees have Giancarlo Stanton, Aaron Judge, Joey Gallo. I almost forgot Joey Gallo. Aaron Hicks. They could have Suzuki. We don't know what they're going to do with Brett Gardner. Brett Gardner has expressed an interest in coming back again. And I can't picture Brett Gardner playing for anyone else. That would be really strange. So it's not as if the Yankees don't have options for the outfield, but this could be something, you know, could be exciting. And they don't have Clint Frazier anymore, so there's room. Suzuki is 27 years old. He plays in the NPB, which is Japan's big league. He's played in 9 seasons with the Hiroshima Carp. In those 9 seasons, he's batted .315, .415, .571 with 182 home runs. He hit a career high of 38 last season, and he has 82 stolen bases overall. He's a 5-time All-Star. He's won a Golden Glove for fielding and an NPB Best 9 winner for being the best player at his position. He was also a teammate of Masahiro Tanaka on the Japanese national baseball team. They won the gold last summer, if you recall correctly. So he's pretty much been the type of player that the Yankees would probably want to bring over. And, you know, the Yankees have had good luck and bad luck with Japanese players. Hideki Matsui, good luck. Hideki Irabu, no. The guy who ran all the time, the pitcher. Why can't I think of his name? This is terrible. Oh no. Why can't I think of his name? I'm picturing him too. I'll think of it. It'll come to me. It's Monday. Obviously, they had very good luck with Masahiro Tanaka. Oh, speaking of Tanaka, he re-upped with his team in Japan, so there won't be any reunion with the Yankees. Some people were thinking that maybe he would opt out or maybe he wouldn't re-sign with his team in Japan and maybe reunite with the Yankees, but that's not happening. That's a bummer. I'm bummed. I was bummed that the Yankees didn't have Tanaka last year. I'm bummed that he's not coming back. I feel like he was a big loss in that rotation last year. The Yankees would have had a much different year if Masahiro Tanaka was still there. Although with the sticky stuff ban and all the weird stuff that was happening with the different balls, who knows? Then again, he may have been outspoken about it. Because he did mention something in 2020 about the balls feeling different. And I think if he noticed that in 2021, he would have said something. But anyway, what are you going to do? So no Masahiro Tanaka, possibly Seiya Suzuki. I love that name, I really do. The Yankees have to sign him just for his name. Just do it. And he's actually good in the outfield. He has good speed on the bases, they said. And his defensive run saved and his UZR, his ultimate zone rating, are among the best in his league. So I'm all about good defense, especially good outfield defense. I know that some people are a little worried just because not every Japanese player coming over does well offensively. You have the rarities like Matsui, like Ichiro Suzuki. But I kind of like this, and I think that maybe the Yankees should go for it. Why not? Because it doesn't look like you're going for anything else. With the lockout, they can't go for much. But I don't know. Things seem too quiet before the lockout happened, and that worries me a little bit about the whole, it's the year of the shortstop. Oh, maybe we'll do a stopgap shortstop, because now there's word they're interested in Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. That's how you say it. Falefa? I know I'm going to say his name wrong. Bryce, don't kill me. Bryce, host of Locked On Rangers, is going to yell at me because I didn't say his name right. I'm so sorry. Andre Simmons. I'm a little worried that the Yankees are going to go for the defensive over offensive shortstop when they can go for Carlos Correa, who's both. I don't know why they would do that. I really don't. I know they have shortstops in the system that maybe they want to look at, but that scares me. Those don't always work out. You know? I don't know. That makes me uncomfortable. Let me know what you think about that. Either tweet at Locked On Yankees, tweet at my account, Stace Gotts, leave comments on YouTube. Let me know what you think about the possibility of, instead of going after Correa, the Yankees getting a stopgap shortstop for a year or two, who is better defensively and not offensively. They do need someone in the field who can field the position. I just feel as if they need more offense, and Carlos Correa can do both, so let me know what you think. Does this sound familiar? You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the good stuff. Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes and no need to buy another device ever again. And the best part, there's no annual contract. So get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. That's DirecTV.com. Compatible device is required and the content varies by package. Thanks again for making Locked On Yankees your first listen every day. We're free and available on all platforms. So, as I mentioned, some Hall of Fame news. Not all of it good, I will admit. But let's see. The Hall of Fame class of 2022. So the Golden Days era committee elected Gil Hodges, Jim Cott, Minnie Minoso, Tony Oliva, Bud Fowler, and Buck O'Neill. Okay. Fowler and O'Neill were chosen by the Early Baseball Era Committee, and Oliva, Cott, Hodges, and Minoso were elected by the Golden Days Era committee. They'll all be honored along with any selections from the Baseball Writers Association ballot, and this will happen on July 24th, 2022 in Cooperstown, New York. Can't believe we're in we're almost in 2022. Among those six players selected, Cott and Oliva are the only ones still alive. They were also teammates on the Twins from 1962 to 1973. They're both 83 years old, so good for them. The one that I was so relieved about, but also so frustrated with, was Buck O'Neill. Buck O'Neill died in 2006. He should have been elected into the Hall of Fame before that. And I'm going to recommend a book. And if you've watched this podcast or listened to this podcast, you know that I struggle with ADHD. So the fact that I read a book is a miracle. But if you have not read The Soul of Baseball, A Road Trip Through Buck O'Neill's America by Joe Posnanski, you must read it. It is my favorite baseball book. I adore that book. And I will tell you right now, I am not afraid to admit it. I cried for 20 minutes after I finished that book, knowing that Buck O'Neill died without going into the Hall of Fame. And he wanted it so badly. He really did. And if you believe that there's another place where people go after they pass away, hopefully Buck O'Neill is looking down and seeing that he finally got into the Hall of Fame. But it was long overdue, and I just wish that he was here to see that. I wish all the guys who aren't here, Gil Hodges is another one who should have been in a long time ago and wasn't and isn't here to see it. But good for Cott. And good for Oliva to be here to see that. Cott said, "This is truly a gift. I truly never thought this day would come, but the added happiness I have is that I get to share it with my teammate Tony Oliva, who I've known for so long since he came up as a kid and developed into a Gold Glove outfielder. For us Minnesota Twins, it's going to be a great summer." And speaking of that, Cott is going in with a Twins hat on his plaque. He already said that. And, you know, if you're a longtime Yankee fan, you remember listening to Kitty on the air broadcasting Yankee games, so I'm happy for Jim Cott. I think that's pretty cool. Now, Hodges, 8-time All-Star in an 18-year career as first baseman for the Dodgers and the Mets. He won 3 Gold Gloves. He led the Dodgers to 7 National League pennants and 2 World Series titles. He hit 370 career home runs, which were the third most by a right-handed hitter at the time of his retirement in 1963. He managed the 69 Miracle Mets to the World Series. He passed away all the way back in 1972. And he's another one that probably should have been in sooner, but he's finally there. Now, Jim Cott, his career, he pitched 25 seasons with the Senators, Twins, White Sox, Phillies, Yankees, and Cardinals. He won 283 games over 4 decades from 1959 to 1983. He played until 1983. I went to my first game in 1983. That's crazy. And was a member of the 1982 World Series champion Cardinals. Cott's 625 career games started rank 17th all-time, and his 4,530 and one-third innings rank 25th. He said, "I was never a number one pitcher. The Hall of Fame rewards dominance. Koufax, Gibson, Marischal, I wasn't dominant. I was durable. I was dependable. I was your number two guy or three guy, but I'm grateful to the committee that they chose to reward some durability." And I mean, hell, 25 seasons pitching. I know it was a different era back then, and these guys weren't throwing 100 miles an hour, but that's a lot of seasons to be throwing. And 4,530 innings is a lot on an arm. So good for Kitty. Nice job. Manoso played 17 seasons with Cleveland, the White Sox, Cardinals, and Senators. He was a 9-time AL/NL All-Star, 4-time Negro Leagues All-Star, 3-time Gold Glove winner as an outfield, and he was a prominent member of the Go-Go White Sox of the 50s and 60s. So in an MLB career that spanned from 1949 to 1980, he was only the second player to appear in a game in 5 different decades. He passed away back in 2015. Oliva played 15 seasons for the Twins. He won 3 batting titles, led the AL in hits 5 times. He was an 8-time All-Star, won the 1964 AL Rookie of the Year honor. He received AL MVP votes in each year from 64 to 71. And he missed enshrinement via the Golden Era Committee by 1 vote in 2015. I actually do remember that. He said, "To be able to get that call, you know, I'm 83 years old, to be alive and to be able to say hello to the people and thank you to the people means a lot to me." That's so cute. Now, Fowler passed away all the way back in 1913. He's often acknowledged as the first black professional baseball player. He pitched and played second base for teams in more than a dozen leagues throughout his career. He actually spent part of his youth in Cooperstown before eventually helping to form the successful Page Fence Giants barnstorming team. Now, Buck O'Neill, as I said, his selection comes 15 years after he was controversially not among those who entered the hall via the 2006 Special Committee on the Negro Leagues. He died shortly after that omission, which is why I was bawling after I finished that book, knowing that he went to his grave disappointed that he didn't make the Hall of Fame. And I remember the outrage when it happened then, and for it to finally happen 15 years later. Oh boy, I wasn't expecting this to happen. I'm just so happy, and I hope that his family is happy too for that, because he deserved it. So anyway, whew, I wasn't expecting that to happen. Holy hell. that's embarrassing. I'm embarrassed that I'm crying about Buck O'Neill, but you know, what are you going to do? This stuff happens. The one thing I will mention is that Dick Allen fell one vote short. Ken Boyer didn't make it. Roger Maris didn't make it. Danny Murtaugh, Billy Pierce, and Maury Wills. I'm annoyed about Dick Allen. He keeps getting shut out of this, and I think he needs to be in. I don't know what these guys are doing who are voting, but justice for Dick Allen, maybe? Like, get him in at some point, please, because he should be in. Whew. Wow. I really can't believe I started tearing up about Buck O'Neill. But then again, I said I cried for 20 minutes after I finished that book. And again, The Soul of Baseball, A Road Trip Through Buck O'Neill's America by Joe Pasnansky. Read it. I'm telling you, read it. It is so good. It's so good. The other thing I'm going to tell you to do, because I tell you to do this all the time, is to buy Built Bar. This holiday season, grab the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar or even better than a candy bar. Built Bar, filled with so much holiday goodness, rich with decadent flavor, covered in chocolate, but amazingly low in calories, sugar, net carbs, and fat. It's high in protein. So it's high in the good stuff, low in the bad stuff. You get the best of both worlds. They're delicious and healthy. There's so many flavors you'll have a hard time choosing. Will you have raspberry or mint brownie, cherry or double chocolate, cookies and cream or peanut butter brownie? Built Bar gives you that extra fuel you need to bust down those mall doors and battle all the holiday shoppers. Wearing a mask, of course. And if you're standing in those lines, Built Bar can give you that extra something to keep you going. So throw one in your jacket or purse, because you never know when you're going to need it. Because it's the season of peace and love, don't bring up your favorite Built Bar flavor at family parties. People are so passionate about their favorite flavor, they'll fight for it and things could get out of hand. Are you friends with Santa? Tell Santa. Throw a few Built Bars in those stockings. With so many flavors, they'll make anyone's Christmas morning a happy one. Like some of those marshmallowy treats around the holidays, you need to get your hands on Built Bar Puffs. They're light, fluffy, and marshmallowy through and through. And let me tell you, they are good. I have tried them. Get them. Different flavors, all covered in chocolate, taste so good you won't believe they're filled with protein. Seriously, I'm not lying. I had one for breakfast the other day. So good. Go to Built.com, use promo code LOCKED15, and you'll get 15% off your order. So it's segment three. I promised a random game. We're doing a random game. And the reason I chose this game is someone posted about it on Reddit. Yes, I'm on Reddit. I know. Reddit is kind of scary. I'll admit that. But I like that they brought this game up, because it was one of my favorite games during this season. We are going to look back, not totally, but we're going to look back at May 17th, 2010. Yankees, Red Sox. It was a Monday night. It was at Yankee Stadium. The game started at 7:10 p.m. The attendance was 48,271, which I believe is either a sellout or close to a sellout at New Yankee Stadium, because, you know, the Yankees were defending champions. They were playing the Red Sox. It was a big game. So let's go through the lineups really quickly. Marco Scudero, Dustin Pedroia, J.D. Drew, Kevin Youkilis, Victor Martinez, David Ortiz, Adrian Beltre, Jeremy Hermida, Darnell McDonald, and Daisuke Matsuzaka. who recently retired, as in, I think, yesterday, right? Was that when the ceremony was? He retired in Japan. He started for the Red Sox, for the Yankees, Derek Jeter, Brett Gardner, Mark Teixeira, Alex Rodriguez, Robinson Cano, Francisco Cervelli, Marcus Thames, Randy Winn, who I saw hit a home run earlier that month in 2010 against the Orioles, Ramiro Pena played third, and Phil Hughes started the game. All right, so Dice K only lasted 4 2/3. He gave up 7 runs on 9 hits with 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. He did not give up a home run. That is important news because of what happened later in the game. Phil Hughes pitched 5 innings, gave up 5 runs on 6 hits, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts, 2 home runs, because Phil Hughes liked to give up 2 home runs, or liked to give up home runs when he pitched. It's just something that he did. I saw him give up 5 before they took him out? There was a game that my brother and I went to. It was an extremely hot day. I believe it was 2011. And yeah, Phil Hughes was just battered around, battered. I think it may have been the Braves. I'll have to double check that. But David Ortiz hit his 7th home run of the year off Phil Hughes in the 4th inning. And J.D. Drew hit his 6th home run of the season off Phil Hughes in the 5th inning. Now, we're not going to go through the whole game, but I'm just going to tell you that the Yankees found themselves down 9-7 going into the bottom of the 9th. I had to do very quick math in my head because for some reason my brain was not allowing me to remember what actually the score was going into the 9th inning. That's what it was. Okay, so it's the bottom of the 9th. The Yankees are facing Jonathan Papelbon, okay? And the 2-3-4 batters are up first. So Brett Gardner, Mark Teixeira, Alex Rodriguez. Brett Gardner starts things off with a double on the 6th pitch that he saw from Papelbon. Mark Teixeira hit a deep fly ball to right that advanced Gardner to 3rd. Then on the 1st pitch that he threw to Alex Rodriguez, Alex Rodriguez tied the game. That was exciting. Robinson Cano hit a fly out to deep center field for out number 2, and that was on the 6th pitch of that at-bat. Francisco Cervelli was hit by a pitch on the 2nd pitch of his at-bat, and then on the 1st pitch of his at-bat, Marcus Thames was sitting dead red and hit a fly ball home run to left. Yeah, I guess it was down the left field line, right? Yeah, down the left field line, and the Yankees win 11-9. I remember watching it and laughing because I was texting with a friend of mine who predicted that Papelbon was going to blow the game. He said to me, he's blowing this. I know he is. And I thought to myself, that would be wonderful. If it could happen, that'd be great. And it did. Now, there was a lot of scoring, obviously, because the Yankees won 11-9. And as I said, Dice K gave up 7 runs in his appearance, and the Yankees scored 5 runs in the 1st inning. So let's look at that because we have some time. So let's do it. I love doing this. This is so much fun. Bottom of the 1st, Derek Jeter led off. There we go. With a single. Brett Gardner hit a single. Mark Teixeira walked. Alex Rodriguez hit a single that scored Jeter and Gardner. Teixeira made it to 3rd. Cano hit a single that scored Teixeira. Rodriguez made it to 2nd. Francisco Cervelli hit a double that scored A-Rod. Cano was thrown out at home. Cervelli made it to 3rd on the throw to home. Marcus Thames hit a sac fly that scored Cervelli. And then Randy Winn struck out swinging, so the Yankees scored those 5 runs on 5 hits. 5-0 at that point. Now, the Red Sox cut it to 5-1 in the top of the 2nd. Adrian Beltre hit a single that scored Youkilis. Mark Teixeira hit a double that scored Gardner that put the Yankees up 6-1. So the Yankees had a pretty big lead in this game. And then, let's see. Phil Hughes gave up the 3-run home run to J.D. Drew when the Red Sox were down 6-2 to make it 6-5. So then when the Yankees were up 6-5, Marcus Thames hit a double. Marcus Thames had a good game that night. He had the sac fly. He had this double. He had the game-winning home run. And Tim Wakefield came in to replace Dice K. Now, it's amazing. After he gave up those 5 runs, Terry Francona kept him in. So Dice K lasted until the bottom of the 5th inning. and he was taken out after Marcus Thames's double. So the Yankees went up 7-5. Then Boone Logan gave up a home run to Victor Martinez because he came in to replace Phil Hughes in the top of the sixth. That made it 7-6. And let's see. Okay, yeah. Top of the eighth, Chan Ho Park. Remember when Chan Ho Park pitched for the Yankees? Yeah. He didn't have a very good top of the eighth inning. He gave up a single to J.D. Drew. Kevin Youkilis hit a home run. That put them up 8-7 at that point. And then Victor Martinez went back-to-back with Youkilis, hit a solo home run. That put them up 9-7. And then that's how we got to the bottom of the ninth, in which the Yankees won. But yeah, Yankees-Red Sox games used to be more exciting. I said this on the show with, I believe Abby was on with me when I said it. I wasn't even that excited about the wild card game. It felt like the series in Fenway when Giancarlo Stanton hit all those home runs. That was really the high point, you know? And the, I don't know, the wild card game didn't feel right. I don't know. And it wasn't because, you know, Cole was taken out so early and things weren't happening. It just, I don't know. I feel like the rivalry between the Red Sox and the Yankees isn't what it used to be. It wasn't even, oh God, it didn't even feel that great in 18 in the division series. And I don't know. I feel like it's run its course a little bit. And I don't even find myself getting as angry when the Yankees lose to the Red Sox. I get more angry when they lose to the Rays because the Rays are better, you know? I don't know, it just seems weird, but the rivalry isn't the same as it was last decade and definitely not two decades ago in the 2000s because the 2000s were two decades ago. I know, I can't believe it either. Anyway, so do the Yankees go after see ya, Suzuki. I'm going to say it like that all the time. I'm so sorry. So if they do sign this man, I'm not going to apologize for it. I'm not. I'm going to say, see ya, Suzuki, all the time. Because how can you not? How can you not? And you know, as I said at the top of the show, you know Michael Kay wants them to sign him just for that. Come on, Yankees, do it. Do it for us. Do it. Anyway. And then some, a former Yankee got into the Hall of Fame, although he's going in as a Twin because he played with the Twins more, but a former Yankees broadcaster, Jim Cott, good job. You know, again, Buck O'Neill, very happy that he finally got in, just bummed that he didn't get in before he passed away and that it took 15 years for him to get in, but he's in and that's a good thing. And we got to look back at a game from 2010 that the Yankees actually won in exciting fashion. Thank you, Marcus Thames. Good luck to you. I believe the Marlins hired him, correct? I'll double check that. And I still can't think of the pitcher. The guy who ran all the time, the Japanese guy. What's his name? We used to make fun of him on a website that I used to do Photoshops for. I'm going to think of it and I'll let you know tomorrow. But if you remember who the guy is, there were always pictures of him running. Why can't I think of him? But he was a guy that the Yankees brought over and he could not pitch in the majors. He spent most of his time in the minors, and I can't think of his name, and I'm so annoyed right now because it's just not coming to me. So hopefully it'll come to me tomorrow. Well, you know what I'll do? I'll look it up right now after I'm done recording this, and I'll let you know who it is. So that's it for this episode of Locked On Yankees, which is part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'd like to remind you that you can listen to the show in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Odyssey, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you get your podcasts. You can watch and subscribe to us on YouTube. And when you get into your car, you can tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Bets. Make your second listen of the day Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. One more thing, if you could be so kind, please rate the podcast and spread the word about this podcast to your fellow Yankee fans. We would really appreciate it. Enjoy your Monday, and I will talk to you all tomorrow, and I will let you know who that person is.